This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Tuesday afternoon, September 13th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. I'm Rob Hart. The inflation report, the Consumer Price Index for the month of August, is out, and it sent markets tumbling. Let's get the latest insight on the CPI from Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, KPMG, based in Chicago. Diane, thanks for joining us today. When we last spoke at 10:20, we mentioned that the any savings that customers experienced at the gas pump in the month of August was completely wiped out at the grocery store because the prices of several staple items went up in the month of August and went up in a big way, especially on a year-over-year basis. What's the deal with proteins and eggs? What is driving the price increases in those two particular categories?
Well, you've got everything from feed to transportation costs pushing up the cost. We've also got, in addition to a lot of the proteins that we're seeing go up, our processed foods, things like hot dogs, lunch meats, the things you put into kids' lunches when they go to school. And all of those things are, you know, getting the double whammy of transportation costs, feed costs, and other issues that, in terms of packaging, that they've had to deal with. And I think that's what's showing up in some of those. And you're seeing just, I mean, the eggs are just stunning. They're almost up 40% from a year ago. Really incredible gains. But I think it's important because some of these things are things that people trade into. When proteins go up, they might go towards sandwich meats instead of an actual big piece of meat that they buy, or a chicken that they buy. And I think that's important as well. We're also going into, you know, what's been droughts, fires, floods, you name it, in terms of extreme weather events that are really hurting also across the board, everything from livestock to crops. And I think that all is coming together in a very hard way, along with the war in Ukraine this year, that we just, you know, can't escape anymore. And that said, even though the Federal Reserve can't grow food and they can't pump oil, they do actually worry about how much things like that distort our behaviors every day and get baked into what we expect going forward. And that's what they have to fight. They also have to combat that we've got shelter and medical costs going up, but that means more interest rate hikes. And my concern is that it means more interest rate hikes at the expense of higher unemployment as well.
And then very quickly on the housing front, if you refinanced your mortgage in 2020 and locked in a low rate, your mortgage is actually running behind the rate of inflation. But where are these increased housing costs coming from?
It's a great question. And the way that these come through is, over time, increases in home values, it takes anywhere from a year to 18 months for an increase in a home value to show up in what we call owner's equivalent rent. That's either what you would rent your home out at, what you may actually do if you were to rent it out. And there were a lot of investors in the market flipping to rent instead of flipping to sell, institutional investors with deep pockets that did that. And that pushed up the rents of homes. But also, we're seeing rental costs going up themselves. And although some high-frequency rental costs like that we saw in the market showed a decline from August, from July to August, that still is up significantly in a huge sticker shock for many people out there renting apartments as well. And remember, as the stock, as it, housing became more and more, less and less affordable for those people out there who didn't lock into those low rates, all of a sudden their demand for rental housing went way up. And so that's pushing up the rents as well. And that's a really hard issue because we're starting to see the rising ranks again. We saw them back before the pandemic set in, the rising ranks of the working homeless. And that's something that is really tragic in what should be a wealthy economy.
Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, KPMG, based in Chicago. Thanks for joining us. Coming up, a look at the markets through the lens of the Dow theory.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The time-tested Dow theory continues to remain bearish, and today's acceleration to the downside puts the June lows within reach. Joining us to discuss the markets is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter based in Hammond, Indiana. Chuck, thanks for joining us today. One way you can look at today's major sell-off is that the markets are essentially giving back the gains from the last couple of days or so. How close are we to those June lows and possibly seeing a retest of that number?
Well, we're certainly getting a retest right now coming off the August 16th highs, and it'll be a question as to whether the both the Dow Jones Industrial Average and Dow Jones Transportation Average, which are the two indices that the Dow theory uses, whether they can hold those June 17th lows. And in the case of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, that low is around 29,888. And in the case of the Dow Jones Transportation Average, the low is about 12,868. So while we're still above those lows, it looks likely that, you know, this retest will continue, and we'll see if those lows can hold. If they can, and then we have a rally in the market back above the August 16th high levels, that would constitute a change in the primary trend from bearish to bullish under the Dow theory. But right now, the last major signal under the Dow theory was bearish, and thus that's kind of what we're working under. But it lays out pretty clearly. You know, we've got the lows, the important lows, and the important highs, and we'll see how the market responds here.
And then as the week goes on, what will investors be looking for as far as signals about the trajectory of the economy? Because we have the CPI number. We know that means the pace of interest rate hikes is going to continue and maybe actually pick up. But what do you do then between now and September 20th when the Fed actually has their meeting?
Yeah, I'm not sure you do a lot. And you know, just looking at what we're doing in the sense that, you know, we're kind of positioned a little bit on the defensive side because of the way the trend has been going in terms of bearish. But we're not making any significant moves one way or the other until we kind of get the answer from the market. And the market's going to answer that by whether it can hold those June 17th lows or go back above those August 16th highs. So from an investor standpoint, I'm not sure this is a period, unless you're a trader trading kind of daily volatility, that you should be doing a whole lot, because I think the market is going to answer that big question here sometime over the next couple of months.
Now, let's say there is a little bit of a rally, that either a lack of surprises or a combination of some encouraging numbers come out, or maybe some good geopolitical trends. Maybe there's a settlement in the war in Ukraine. And you start dancing towards those August 16th highs. It seems like if there is a run of good news, the markets are poised for a breakout.
Well, that would be possibly the case, and that would what would constitute an important move above those August 16th highs. And again, under the Dow theory, that would constitute a new bull market trend. So you would expect almost a pretty decent breakout over time if, in fact, we do get above those August 16th levels. You know, it's also, from an investor standpoint, worth noting that, you know, we are probably about a month away from when we start getting third quarter earnings reports. And so we're kind of in this news lull, other than kind of macroeconomic data. But, you know, the third quarter earnings reports, where we have seen pretty significant earnings reductions for the second half of this year, they're going to be quite telling. And that's probably when we will see how the market determines those corporate profits and whether it can break out of this trading range or not to the upside.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter based in Hammond, Indiana. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Coming up next on this Travel Tuesday, an ongoing pilot shortage, how that's impacting U.S. airlines.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Airlines are facing a severe pilot shortage. Let's get an update from Ken Goldstein, president of KJG International Consulting, based in Chicago. Ken, thanks for joining us today. Some estimates put this pilot shortage today at about 8,000 pilots, and it could reach 30,000 by 2025. This has been a problem brewing for a long time.
Yeah, this is something that we've been talking about on the News and Business Hour for many a year, and the airlines are slowly starting to get it. They've got ground schools to try to train more pilots. United has a flight school out in Arizona. American's got something. But as we've discussed many times, the problem is worldwide. And add to that, in our own country, our military is in need of pilots too. So for those who are thinking of a good vocation, going into aviation, become a pilot is a good one.
And the problem is, and this has been the case since the beginning of aviation, a pilot is a highly skilled trade. And if you wanted to learn to fly without going through the military first, you had to be from a rather well-to-do family. But now the military pilot is not Tom Cruise in Top Gun. It's not somebody flying an F-16. It's somebody behind a desk in Las Vegas driving a joystick because they're piloting drones.
Well, yes, the Air Force has that, and they've taken people to fly the drones that we used in many of our conflicts overseas. But again, remember, Top Gun Maverick were both, in a sense, recruiting efforts by the military, particularly the Navy and Marine Corps, to get people interested in flying. But the long and short is, there are aviation schools. The airlines have known this to do, and they're getting their own things. But the long and short, it is still a very expensive proposition because you can't just say, okay, I'm going to become a pilot. You have to accumulate hours, get your commercial license, and then be accepted into the airlines. The airlines right now, in the short term, what they've done is they've taken many a pilot and upgraded them from the regional carriers up to the main line. So there's a shortage there. And the airlines, going back to the COVID situation, they allowed too many to retire or bought out their contracts. Not a good thing.
And it used to be, if you were coming into the airline system, you began in those feeder carriers, and they worked you real hard. You had an 18-hour day. You began in one leg of the traversed the entire country. The pay was relatively low. You wanted to work your way up to the big equipment going overseas, which paid six figures. And a lot of pilots washed out, and I would imagine the airlines want those pilots back.
Well, they do. But again, going back to that, this is one of the things. The pilots in the regional carriers, the smaller jets, if you will, flying to places like DeKalb or Decatur or, downstate, they needed the hours. They had to start somewhere. The pay was not there, but they weren't working necessarily for the main line, United, American, Delta. They worked for United Express, American Eagle, et cetera. But the long and short is that I think is starting to change because the airlines are starting to give pay increases to the lower rank and file pilots. They also noticed that this is a long-term situation. They got to do something. And let me just add one thing, because we spoke to each other from yesterday and I'm still in London. Let me give you an update on London. The RAF, the Queen's body is on her way down to RAF Northolt, will be brought to London this evening at the Buckingham Palace, and will go tomorrow morning over to Westminster. And the crowds will be enormous.
And talk about an auspicious assignment if you are an RAF pilot, that you'll be flying the Queen in her final journey back to London. Ken Goldstein, President, KJG International Consulting, based in Chicago, currently in London, giving us the perspective on both the recruiting problems for airline pilots and on the state of mourning for Queen Elizabeth II. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The coffin carrying the late Queen Elizabeth is being flown to London. Travel Tuesday, a passenger train service is in jeopardy from a threatened national rail workers' strike, and the strong dollar is impacting both consumers and the stock market. WBBM Business, the markets are lower. The Dow is down 815 points. The NASDAQ is down 447, and the S&P 500 is down 115. AccuWeather says clouds giving way to sunshine today, becoming warmer this afternoon, a high of 76. 73 degrees right now under partly sunny skies at 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour, Amtrak has already suspended some service out of Chicago, and Metra faces major issues should a threatened strike by freight railroad workers take place this weekend. The latest from WBBM's Mike Krauser.
The earliest a strike by conductors and engineers would occur is Friday, the end of a 60-day cooling-off period. The freight companies own most of the tracks. A strike would impact commuters on 9 of Metra's 11 lines. Nigel Johnson rides the train from Naperville. He spoke to CBS2.
I've been commuting from the suburbs to Chicago now for over 30 years. I can never remember this happening. Hopefully it doesn't come to that.
It has been 30 years since there's been a national rail strike. For Metra riders, only the Metra Electric and Rock Island lines would operate should there be a strike. If freight is not moving at a time when there are already supply chain issues, the impact would go beyond an inconvenience for commuters. Mike Krauser, 105.9 WBBM.
The City of London is preparing to hold the public visitation for Queen Elizabeth.
People have been told not to camp out on the line for Queen Elizabeth's lying in state, but no such restrictions have been put on those trying to nab a good spot along the funeral procession route. About 100 people are already camping out along the mall outside Buckingham Palace. Just for those few moments, they'll be able to watch the funeral cortege go by tomorrow. Vicky Barker, CBS News, London.
Hey, it's 12:32 on the Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are deep in the red today. We're joined by Gary Kaltbaum, president of Kaltbaum Capital Management, based in Orlando. Gary, thanks for joining us today. And investors are once again internalizing that message from the Fed a couple of weeks ago that the interest rate hikes will continue until morale improves or inflation goes down.
Yeah, it's a continuation of everything we've talked about for months. You had a couple of years of a central bank adding trillions of dollars into the system, creating all kinds of moves in asset prices, some insane assets like the coins and NFTs. And now you get the backside of that, no pun intended, and that is having to tighten because of all the inflation that I do believe, and I said it from day one, that this central bank created. And where she stops, we don't know. But the key is just watch yields. The 2-year, just the 2-year yield is at like 3.7 and change. And the 10-year yield is about to break the highs of June. And that means cost of capital of everything goes up. And that is going to be bad for markets. Simple as that.
Now, the consensus is still that the Fed is going to raise interest rates by 0.75 percentage point when they convene later this month. But now there's an outside possibility that they could just go and raise rates by a full point. Is higher better under these circumstances?
In the effect that they're playing catch up, higher is better to get it over with. But I have news for you. They can raise rates by a point and a half and just be even with the actual market rates. And just remember, we talked about the Fed a lot. Everybody talks about them too much. It's the real yields in the market is where you get your mortgages from and your payments on. And as I said, the 10-year yield, which ties to mortgage, is already near 3.5, and our Fed is only 2.3. So they're just playing catch up at this point in time. And the quicker they do that, the better. My worry is, based on what I saw today on that inflation report, they may have to go into the fours and the market may go into the fours. And again, if that occurs, the competition for money heats up versus the market, and you're seeing it in droves today, the market giving back a bunch of what it made the last few days.
If the rate of interest rate hikes kept up with the rate of inflation, how would that look in the economy at large? Consumers, governments, everyone who has to borrow money, what would that look like for everybody who needs financing to get by?
It'll be a lot tougher. Number one, for homes, between how high prices went with the combination of now much higher mortgage payments, that's a problem. And that's why you're seeing housing in trouble now. So really across the board, companies' access to capital is different. Just remember, while the money was easy, companies that should not have had great access to capital were able to float bonds at 4% when they should have been doing it at 8%. That's now all changed, so it's tougher for them also. So all the way around, we're in this, I don't want to call the word vicious cycle, but a worse cycle at this point in time. The access to capital is tougher, and that's where markets are going to have a real big problem. And leave no doubt, this leads to the next part of the equation, where savings rates have already plunged and credit card usage has skyrocketed. So I do worry about the consumer, but going forward, and since the consumer is 70% of the economy, we could be in one of those uh-oh moments. And, you know, all the talk about recession, I think a good part of the economy is already in it.
Gary Culpom, president of Culpom Capital Management, based in Orlando. Find him online at GaryK.com. Coming up next in Travel Tuesday, Amtrak cuts service ahead of an expected national rail strike. The details on the way.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday. Amtrak has suspended some service out of Chicago in anticipation of a potential freight rail worker strike that could also affect commuter passenger service in Chicago. Let's get the latest now from Joe Schwederman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University, based in Chicago. Joe, thanks for joining us today. Let's lay out the dimensions of what's going on here. The freight railroads and 12 unions that represent their workers are in the process of working through collective bargaining agreements. 9 out of the 12 have done so already. We have 2 more that are still trying to hammer out their deals, and sick time and time off appear to be the major sticking points. But if the holdout unions don't reach an agreement by Friday, all 12 walk off the job, and that will impact not only everything we pay for, because 40% of all goods travel by rail, but it's going to have a major impact on people in the Chicago area. So let's talk about, first off, what's going to happen with Metra commuters if they do encounter a railroad strike on Friday.
That's right. Well, most Metra lines operate over freight railway tracks, and some routes use personnel that actually works at the freight railroads under contract. So they are really in the middle of this, and you simply can't run the network if we have a freight railroad strike. We'll have trains parked everywhere. Of course, we'll have labor that's not available to, so it's going to, for downtown Chicago, there's a lot riding here. Of course, traffic is down since the pandemic, but it has been coming back, and roadway congestion is up again, particularly evening rush hour. So it's really going to be an issue for our region if this happens and drags out.
Unfurling the impact on Metra service is also unfurling the history of railroading in the Chicago area, because there are 4 Metra lines that are called the purchase of service lines. These are the lines in which freight railroad personnel from the BNSF or the Union Pacific actually operate the trains. They climb into the locomotive and they run them. They also look at your Ventra app as conductors, and those are agreements that date back to the 1970s with railroads that no longer exist. There are some other Metra lines, though, where Metra actually owns the trains and they have the personnel. They have their own collective bargaining agreements with them, but they're dispatched by the freight railroads, and the unionized dispatchers could walk off the job on Friday. And then you have the Rock Island and the Metra Electric, both of which they dispatch the lines. They run the locomotives, they hire the personnel, and thanks to the fact that the RTA bought the Rock Island out of bankruptcy in 1980, commuters on the southwest side and southwest suburbs will experience no disruptions on Friday if there is a strike.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, we're fortunate to have, you know, as you mentioned, effectively government ownership over those two routes, the Rock Island, the Metro Electric system. And then we have, you know, pure contracting operations like the BNSF, where they actually are you know, direct employees of the freight railroads. And they get paid based on the national collective bargaining agreement. So they will be striking, and some others are sort of in between. And I think the upshot of this is that Metra not only would have to on those routes that they do contracting suspend service, but people are left hanging. We just don't know if the strike's going to happen, if it's going to drag out, if they're going to be able to marshal personnel to run some basic service, maybe a couple trains at rush hour. All that's up in the air, and I can tell you that the mood in Washington is alarm right now. They see a rail strike will have all these effects beyond just moving freight.
And then, Joe, very quickly, is there anything the government can do in terms of invoking any legal powers to keep the sides talking past the deadline on Friday?
It's pretty unprecedented to declare an additional cooling off period, but there is a possibility here for White House action. We know that the White House has been monitoring this, and Congress also theoretically could take action, but I can tell you that's pretty rare, and that usually happens, say, in wartime economies or in other situations. I don't see that as a white knight here, but the power of the pressure from Washington certainly encourages the freight railroads to try to find a compromise, even if it's going to cost them a little bit on the bottom line.
Joe Schwederman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University, thanks for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday and still to come, taking a closer look at the impact of a strong dollar.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The dollar is surging, and it's having an impact on consumers, commodity prices, and financial markets. Joining us now to discuss is Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Mark, thanks for joining us today. What is driving the good old greenback, and why is it increasing in value around the world?
Well, of course, there are going to be a million individual causes, but I'd say one of the major ones is the fact that interest rates in the United States are higher than those in most of the other major trading partners with which the U.S. does business. And so there's a lot of money sloshing around the international currency markets all the time, and they're always in seek of the highest return. And the highest return right now is the good old greenback. Now, it turns out it's interesting. If those investors around the world felt as though inflation were higher over time than the interest rates that the Federal Reserve is paying, and of course that's relevant because we got a lot of bad news on inflation today, then people probably would not be putting their money into the dollar, because even though the interest rates in a nominal sense are high, after inflation, it turns out then the rate would be negative. And I don't think that the fact that the market doesn't seem to be saying that is suggesting that, at least to that extent, the inflation may not be as bad as the headlines today would make us believe, and indeed as the stock market has reacted by falling nearly 900 points.
Now, the inflation is a worldwide problem, and central banks elsewhere are trying to raise rates to rein in their own issues with inflation. As the European Central Bank or the British Central Bank, as they raise their rates of their interest rates, will that make the dollar less attractive?
Well, in relative terms, yes. But I think in terms of just as you mentioned, their inflation is a lot worse. Indeed, there are some projections that by the later part of this year, early next, inflation in the United Kingdom might hit 20%. And I don't think anyone is coming even close to suggesting that it'll stay that high in this country. And so even though if you just look at the headline interest rates that the Bank of England or the European Central Bank are setting, they may look like, even though I don't think they're actually getting that close, but they may look like they're competitive with the interest rates that the Federal Reserve is setting, if you adjust those rates by inflation, the United States comes out way ahead. So even though in relative terms, whenever they raise rates and we don't over here, that can make it look like the dollar is not quite as attractive as it was before. But I still think overall the advantage that the dollar has is overwhelming, and that's exactly why you see the dollar continuing to go up on the international exchanges.
Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. Thank you for the insight this afternoon. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Odyssey app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.